Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. This summer, the 2009 Summer Language Institute is back for its seventh consecutive year with a very unique and groundbreaking way of trying to teach people how to become more familiar with foreign languages, French and Spanish especially, and initial Arabic and Irish Gaelic are also included this year. And Dr. Shelley Thomas has been running this since the get-go, and she's here to talk with us today about this year's endeavors. Thanks for being with us again, Shelley.
Thanks for asking me, Gina.
This is an institute which year after year has focused on a particular kind of methodology in familiarizing people with foreign languages, total physical response. Why don't you describe that and define that and explain how it's different from the traditional methods of teaching foreign languages that maybe my generation or my parents' generation was more familiar with.
Right, and that includes me. I didn't learn this way either, so I'm particularly interested in it. Total physical response was discovered by Dr. James J. Asher back in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s. And what he noticed is that basically we learn our second language just as we learn our first language. And that was our parents gave us commands. For example, take the cup, take the cookie, put your coat on. And we responded physically. We didn't speak. We just responded physically. And our physical response put the language in long-term memory. For the first 2 years, we didn't say anything. That's called the silent period. We just internalized the structure of the language and the sound of the language. And then when we felt ready, we began to speak. Well, the good news for adults is that this silent period does not last 2 years. It lasts more like a few hours. So what we do in the total physical response language classroom is we focus on concrete language, language that the students can see, verbs that the teacher can act out, and we get it in the student's body so that it goes in long-term memory, and we do it through games, songs, and acting out stories.
What does this say about how human beings learn in general? Do we all learn better by doing than we do than just by repeating or by rote memorization?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that question because a lot of people that teach are not familiar with the research on the brain that pertains to long-term memory. For example, we know from research that there are four memory pathways, four or five. One is the memory pathway that we use, for example, when we touch a hot stove. That's reflexive. We immediately draw back. That's fixed memory. We're not going to forget that. So that's a reflexive response. The next memory pathway is one that we use when we learn to ride a bike, for example. We develop through our muscles a type of memory that helps us remember how to ride the bike. That is a procedural memory. The next memory is episodic. When we have a birthday, for example, we remember that one day, especially during the year, distinct from other days, but it could fade in our memory a bit, so that's a little less fixed. The fourth one, after reflexive, procedural, and episodic, is semantic, and that's where we try to memorize a list of, let's say, dates or facts. Now, that semantic memory is the least fixed, and it can change within a matter of minutes or hours. And unfortunately, that the semantic memory is the memory most used in traditional classes in schools today. And why? Why is that the memory pathway most used? Well, it's the easiest to test. You can give a quick fill in the blank or matching or something like that. So what we need to do is make learning in the classroom as experience-oriented as possible. That doesn't mean that semantic memory doesn't play a part. After we give the students the experience, then we go to analyzing and talking about it. But the experience takes up most of the class, and the analyzing takes up very little at the end. And what we notice with adults is they have a huge advantage over young children because they immediately want to compare their own language with the new language, which that's something children can't do. They can't analyze. So in these adult classes, after we give the adults the experience, then we look at the written word, and they just automatically start asking questions about it, and that's how we get into grammar.
You talked about being easy to test. Education bureaucracies are big on quantitative measures. All bureaucracies are big on quantitative measures. Are there quantitative ways to measure the success rate of total physical response?
Yes, no problem at all. As a matter of fact, I was contacted by the Department of Social Services a couple of years ago because they were interested in teaching their social workers in the Department of Children's Services Spanish. They wanted to use the 5-day language institute to see how quickly their workers could learn Spanish. So one of the people that I recently trained from our Masters of Art program, Brian Roberts, who currently works for the Department of Social Services, he went around Tennessee to different parts of Tennessee and gave these 5-day language institutes. And I had all the participants tested by a nationally standardized test, which is given all of the United States, called the National Spanish Test. So that's a traditional test. And what we found is after 5 days or 23 hours of this method of teaching, there are two methods, TPR and TPRS. Students, now understand, these are middle-aged people working for the Department of Social Services who have 40-hour work weeks, but they have designated a special 5-day period to learn Spanish. They scored almost equal with students from high schools who had completed 1 year of Spanish.
Wow.
So I would say the testing on traditional tests is no problem. What the problem comes when we try to use this in a public school system with teachers that haven't been trained and textbooks that don't reflect this new methodology.
How much training or instruction would a teacher need to become proficient in total physical response teaching techniques?
Well, if people can understand that teaching is an art and a skill, much like music, learning music or learning anything else, then they'll understand that once they get proper mentoring, then they can improve on their own. But what I have noticed in my, I guess I've been training teachers here for 10 years in our Masters of Arts program, they observe me for about 30 hours. They observe me doing TPR and TPRS, and then I give them lesson plans. I've written everything out for them. They practice them, and then I observe them for another 30 hours. And I would say 60 hours of just planting the seed and getting proper training is a beginning. And then after that, they must practice it every day, and they do that because they're immediately employed. What I've tried to do with this training is condense it even more for teachers who are busy during the year and can only get training during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the Language Institute has become, not only do people take language classes in the morning, but for 3 hours every afternoon after they take a class, then I try to coach them, if they're teachers and they want training, in the art of doing TPR or TPRS.
It's important to note that not everyone who participates in the Language Institute is necessarily a teacher. People from all kinds of professions can find TPR very useful.
That's right. Initially, I created it because I noticed that there was an influx of Hispanic families into the community, and I heard my graduate students who are teaching in the K through 12 schools say that they had a hard time communicating with both the Hispanic children and their parents. So I decided to create this Language Institute in 2003 just to see how quickly adults who were teachers at the time, K through 12, could learn Spanish. And the results were so great that I opened it up to the community. And now adults, I say we take children from 12 up to any age of adult, and all professions, all ages, and the results have been pretty fantastic. I was commenting to a friend the other day who's interested in taking Chinese that my oldest Chinese student was 72 years old, and wow. After she got through with the 5-day Language Institute and she was asked, what do you think about Chinese? She said, I think it's really easy. So it's put in such a fun context that it feels easy.
And nobody thinks of Chinese initially, at least from the image, of being very easily because there are so many characters in the language.
That's right. And that's why we, just like when you learned your first language, your parents focused on auditory fluency.
Mm-hmm.
So these classrooms focus on auditory fluency first and then seeing it. Now, the Chinese was written in the alphabet that we use initially, and then verbalizing it.
That makes me wonder about kids who grow up in a bilingual household.
Mm-hmm.
Are they not the living, breathing proof that this method, even though their parents might not have realized that they were employing it by giving Johnny and Jane instructions in two different languages at the same time or in the same living arrangement, are they not the living embodiment of TPR working?
They are, yeah. And this is why adults have fallen under the false impression that they're at a disadvantage either because of their age or some other reason that doesn't really address the real reason. And that's when children are put in a new environment, they're surrounded by visual auditory cues that deal with concrete vocabulary. For example, they might go to a first grade class and students, teachers will say, here's your book, have a seat. On the playground, kids will touch them and show them what games they're playing. But when an adult enters another culture, he is expected to use abstract language immediately in the new language, and he's never had the luxury of crawling before he walks. And that's what TPR does. It provides you the opportunity to crawl with concrete vocabulary before you walk with abstract vocabulary.
And when in an atmosphere in which you need not feel embarrassed or ashamed if your initial efforts don't meet with immediate success.
Exactly. And one thing that we forget a lot as teachers is that trial and error is a huge part of learning. And one thing I'm grateful for is this training that I had with Eric Jensen, who's famous in the United States for training teachers on brain-based learning. What he points out from brain research is that, for example, the experiment with rats and trial and error, two rats were put in a maze, and one rat was shown where the cheese was, and the other rat had to find where the cheese was through trial and error, so it took him longer. But when they got through the experiment and they cut open the brains of the two rats, the rat who had found the cheese through trial and error had grown more dendrites between the left and right hemisphere, so that was the rat that gained intelligence. And we're so focused on giving the kids the right answer and having them perform correctly on tests that we have forgotten about giving them the time to do trial and error in the classroom. That's why it's important when we do these TPR and TPR classes that we provide games and other contexts that are fun and low stress and have no bad consequences so that people can do trial and error. And the feedback is whether or not their team cheers or whether or not they get the point. And that's very important. And we even see it in the animal kingdom when baby cubs play fight. When they play fight, they're experimenting with certain methods of hurting each other. Only the results aren't deadly. And I try to explain to my students, if you make mistakes in here, it doesn't mean you're going to get a bad grade. It doesn't mean, you know, I teach French, so I tell them, it doesn't mean you're not going to get to the place you want to get to in Paris, or you're not going to get the food you want to order. There are no bad consequences in the classroom, and that's really important in the TPR class that we use at the Language Institute.
When adults enter the Summer Language Institute, do they find it difficult to let go of those old patterns of learning, or does the very fact that they are there indicate that you're dealing with a class that is open-minded from the get-go and is willing to experiment and explore?
Well, what has happened is I have never really advertised this. It's been word of mouth. And when one adult comes to the class and realizes how fun it is, they tell other adults. And we created a 15-minute video that's on the website so that adults who have not been exposed to this can actually watch what happens in the classroom. And they'll see other adults talking about how fun it was and how quickly they got over any inhibitions. As a matter of fact, the owner of Bongo Java is one of those, our students, and he...
The coffee house in Nashville.
Yeah, he talks about just how fun it was, not only for them, but they actually got to take the class with some of their children who are age 12 or over. And they said it was, I have three generations in one clip of the video, a grandmother, a mother, and a daughter, and they're all saying they highly recommend it. So I guess there's no problem. There's no problem for me as someone who was trained in the traditional manner. I first came across this when I was well into my 40s, and I loved learning. I've taken a different language every year from my Language Institute: Arabic, Chinese, Spanish, German, French. And every time I'm put in the position of a baby, but I always find it fun.
What about the education establishment? Has TPR made inroads in being integrated into the curriculum, mm-hmm, in public and private schools?
I think the people that took off with it most quickly were the people that teach ESL, English as a Second Language, mm-hmm, because these are the ones that are really on the front lines. They're really in the trenches. They may be teaching a second grade class full of, I've heard this before, 20 or 30 students from 10 different countries. They can't use English as a common language. And when you can't use English, TPR is the way to go because no translation is needed. The teachers give commands like stand up, sit down, touch your head, touch your book, and the teacher actually does it to show the students what she's talking about. And any verbs that she wants to use, like pick up or put down or run or jump, these can all be demonstrated. So I would say yes, since the 60s, TPR has taken off in ESL communities, but one of the problems is TPR and TPRS take a lot of training, and most university professors have not been trained in this. Therefore, there are not many textbooks using it, and textbook companies do not write textbooks for teachers who are not trained in it. So I'm afraid it's kind of like the automobile industry. We know that we can make gas-efficient cars, but it's not being done yet. We know that this is the way to learn languages, but people need to be trained in it.
So it's a matter of time and training and
right,
spreading the word.
Yeah.
If you have both romance languages in here and other languages, Is TPR necessarily any more effective in one group of languages, like the Romance languages, those that are based on Latin, or than it would be on Germanic languages or Asian languages or any particular group?
Mm-hmm. Well, going back to something you yourself said, no, we can look at children. Children all learn languages in the same way. Little Arabic children, little Chinese children, they learn by responding to the commands of their parent. Now, when it's a question of an adult, a Western adult, learning a non-Western language, simply because the sounds in that language are not related to their own language. There are a lot of cognates, for example, in French, between French and English. So a Westerner would pick up more quickly French, Spanish, German, than they would Chinese, Japanese, or Arabic. But they would still pick it up. It would just take a little more time. When I was in India, I was asked to train Tamil teachers, TPR and TPRS. Then I turned around and had those teachers try to teach me Tamil. And what I noticed was there were other people in the class who spoke Hindi but not Tamil, and they picked it up. We were doing a TPR class. They picked it up more quickly because they were used to those types of sounds. So I just think it's familiarity with the type of sound that's coming out.
Tell me some of the other professions besides educator who might benefit from learning TPR. They would use it in their work more frequently.
Right. Yeah. We're trying to appeal to different professions that need on-site training. The car industry, for example, they might need on-site training with Spanish because of Hispanic workers. The medical profession, their nursing staff might need help in the Hispanic language. Realtors, you know, presenting housing to the Hispanic community. The police force. A couple of years ago, I went to the Murfreesboro City Police because they were interested in learning more Spanish. So any professions out there that that come in contact with people that are speaking a different language, if they would contact me, I could try to get in touch with a bilingual speaker who's trained in TPR and TPRS and provide classes for them.
Does it present any difficulties that different countries have different nuances in the way they speak Spanish? For example, the Venezuelans have certain idiosyncrasies. Mexicans have certain idiosyncrasies. Salvadorans have certain idiosyncrasies in their language, and so forth. Does TPR take those into consideration?
You would simply have to have a speaker who was from that particular part of the country. If someone learns the basics of English, they're going to have a hard time, just as we Americans do when they go to England and they're confronted with different accents, Scottish, Irish, you know, British. So whatever the native speaker speaks, that's what the audience is going to learn.
How many people can you accommodate in the Summer Language Institute?
Each class, we try to keep a cap on 20 or 25 so that people get a lot of attention. And it's usually, the classroom is usually in a semicircle because we get up and move so much. So I would say 20 to 25 per class. And you can see how many classes we have, something like 11. So,
let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, three of which are scheduled to be at the O'Moore School of Design in Franklin, and the rest at the University School of Nashville in Nashville.
That's right.
Okay, and we have the cost for all language classes being $350 with an additional $20 material fee, due on the first day of class, and the cost for teacher training is $500, which includes a language class and 12 hours of training.
That's right.
Is there a sign-up deadline?
Well, as soon as the class gets filled up, then we cut off admission, so the sooner they sign up, the better. Registration is open. The website is www.acceleratedacquisition.com, and it's online registration, so you just pay with a credit card online.
Mm-hmm. Foreign languages are your forte, but as an educator, have you thought about the possible manipulation of TPR or its adaptability to teaching in other disciplines?
Yes, and that's already been written about by Dr. Asher. The application to math is glaring. There is such math anxiety, and yet because it's so abstract, and yet if concrete objects were used, we know very well from watching famous movies like Stand and Deliver, the improvement in learning when people are given concrete things to manipulate is astounding. It can be across disciplines. Physics, in particular, one of my colleagues, Vic Monemeyer, learned about the importance of kinesthetic learning 20 years ago and really revolutionized his department. They used to get together 3 times a week for lecture and 1 time a week for lab. But since introducing this notion of the importance of kinesthetic learning, they now have 3 labs a week and 1 time a week of lecture. So really across the board, all disciplines are discovering the importance of kinesthetic learning and how that needs to be the focus of class experience and then analyzing.
Math is a foreign language to many
exactly.
of us.
Yeah.
And since it seems like experts have been telling us for the past 20 years or so that this country is falling behind in math and science education, mm-hmm. perhaps that would be the key to bringing those of us who don't see math as our forte up to speed.
Yeah, one of my students, I've had several students who were physics majors who went on to medicine, and one in particular, John Michael, who is going to med school, he, after taking my TPR and TPRS classes and going to Europe and even getting training in America, those courses like anatomy that take so much memorization power, he said, could be learned much more easily with a TPR approach. And he is thinking about working on some virtual reality games and such to help that happen.
What about a profession in which it is essential that you get absolutely every word and nuance right, say, interpreter, especially in a legal situation? Does TPR help to get people off the ground if that is their ultimate career aspiration?
Exactly. Remember, TPR is just the crawling stage. People can try to bypass that. It's just painful. A lot of people who are considered analytical thinkers may want to bypass this, and that's fine. When you're getting into interpreting, yes, definitely. The stage we haven't talked about is TPR storytelling. So after they learn, they crawl, let's say, with TPR, then they take baby steps with TPR storytelling, which takes some of this concrete vocabulary and hangs it on some high-frequency grammar structures like I want, I'm going, I'm crying, I'm things that we use every day in language. We practice stories with the students, and then later on, reading and writing and the tiny parts of translation are addressed.
And if you didn't know anything in a foreign language ever, it must feel amazingly wonderful to be able to stand before a group and tell an entire story in
yeah.
a foreign language.
Well, you can see this on the videotape that we have on our website. A woman came from Knoxville to learn Chinese, and she got home and her husband said after the first day of the 5-day institute, "What'd you learn, honey?" And she told him a 10-minute story. And the philosophy behind that is people are creating their own system of rewards. When you are successful in class, dopamine is released in your brain. It makes you feel good. It motivates you. And this is what we see a lot when we get comments from students in these TPR classes is, I felt so motivated to learn more.
Yeah. May we give out your office phone number and email address if you want to learn more? You've already mentioned the website.
That's right. My office address is 898-5757.
It's Dr. Shelley Thomas. The 2009 Summer Language Institute will be conducted at the Omore School of Design in Franklin and the University School of Nashville in Nashville from May 11th through an as-yet-to-be-determined date in July. But more to come. Make sure you go to the website. This is MTSU on the record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at the same time next Sunday. And you can catch us at mtsunews.com, download the podcast at your leisure, and we're also available on iTunes. Thank you for being with us today, Shelley.
Thank you, Gina.